Shalom. Welcome back to Wisdom and Torah, Talmudim teachers. This is part three of the series To Know and Love Our King. Now, in part two, I talked about part three actually being a covering the first century writings with the context of what it means to love. But due to a lack of time, because there's so much materials we've got to cover, there's so much depth into these studies into the ancient Near Eastern culture and ancient Near Eastern treaties. I'm going to instead turn that into a PDF, and I'll put together the notes, all the Bible verses that I had for that, and put that up on the forum for you to look into and do your own research. I think you'll really, really enjoy what you find out about the meanings of the first century writings and the context of what it means to love. But instead, what we're going to be doing is finishing up this series with talking about what it means when the scriptures say to know, the Hebrew verb yada, and also with that knowledge, bina, kind of ties into that. So, with this whole series that myself and Daniel and Rico have all been doing, we're all trying to, the big thing here is to get to understand the terminology that is used. I've been starting to homeschool my kids. And one of these books I was reading about talks about how when you don't understand the meanings of words, you tend to gloss them over. But once you actually do learn the meaning of a word, suddenly that word, it's like it just appears all over the place and you start to notice it. And is that because that word is suddenly being used in the English language? Or is it just because you hadn't known what the meaning was before and you just kind of glossed over and didn't even recognize it? So once you learn what it truly means to love and to know, and all the other words that we're going to be covering in all this yeshiva series, it's really going to open up your mind. When you look at the scriptures, you'll suddenly start to see these new words coming in and start to grasp a deeper understanding of what Yahweh is trying to tell us in his Torah. All right, so the word we're going to be going into today, to know, is used as in a suzerain-vassal relationship. It's used as a term which references the mutual legal recognition of covenantal relationship. For a suzerain to know his vassal, that means that he recognizes the other as a legitimate vassal. And likewise, for a vassal to know his suzerain means that he recognizes that suzerain is the legitimate authority over his kingdom, and in our case, over our lives. So this is seen in the ancient Near Eastern treaties in several different places. We're going to go over some of these. And the first one is a treaty between the Hittite king Suplilumus and the vassal Hucanus. And it says, "And you, Hucanus, know only the son regarding lordship. Also my son, of whom I, the son, say, this one everyone should know, you, Hucanus, know him. Moreover, those who are my sons, his brothers, or my brothers, know as a brother or and an associate. Moreover, another lord do not know. The son alone know. Moreover, any other do not know." So you can see here in this treaty that the Hittite king is telling Hucanus that you're only to recognize the Hittite king as your lord, your suzerain, and that all of his the other subjects, the other vassals of the Hittite king, are supposed to know Hucanus as a legitimate vassal. And then he finishes with the command, know only Hucanus. Or sorry, know only the son, who, the Hittite king, they refer to themselves as the son. And this reflects a very, this is very similar to what David told his son Solomon at the right when Solomon was about to take over the kingdom. We can see that in 1 Chronicles 28 verse 9. So let's turn there, and it says, As for you, my son Solomon, know the Elohim of your father, and serve him with a perfect heart, and with a pleasing life. For Yahweh searches all hearts and understandings, and understands all the intents of the thoughts. If you do seek him, he is found by you. But if you forsake him, he rejects you forever. So right there, obviously Solomon knew who Yahweh was. But what David was telling his son was to recognize Yahweh as his ultimate authority in his life. Don't get caught up in becoming in understanding that you're the king and you can do whatever you want. Remember, any earthly king, especially any Israelite king, is supposed to submit to the Father of all of us. All right, let's go to another ancient Near Eastern treaty. This is a treaty between the Hittite king Muwatallis and the vassal Alaxandus. And it says, as he, the rebel, is an enemy to you, even so he is an enemy to the Son, and I, the Son, will know only you. So again here we see that the Son, or the suzerain, tells his vassal to know only the suzerain, and that he does not know this other rebel. He does not respect this rebel as a vassal of his. He only recognizes, Alaxandus, as a true vassal. So you can see there that the language is very similar to Scripture. Now we can understand what that means. Within the vassal treaty relationship, to know means that to recognize the treaty stipulations binding as well. The same treaty later on goes on to tell Alaxandus another part that helps us understand what the word to know means. So let's go there, and it says, moreover, this tablet which I made for you, Alaxandus, read it, or let them read it to you 3 times yearly, year after year, and you, Alaxandus, know it. So right there, the verb to know speaks of Alaxandus recognizing the binding stipulations and keeping to the accords in the treaty. This is very similar to the Torah. If you remember that the Torah is supposed to be read once every 7 years to all of Israel, and they're supposed to know it, right? They're supposed to recognize its stipulations as binding to them. And if they do, then Yahweh will know them. He will recognize them as a legitimate vassal, and the blessings will be poured out instead of the curses. All right, one more example from ancient Near Eastern treaties. This is a letter from Esarhaddon to the Sumerians, who were enemies of Esarhaddon. And it says, they are nomads. They know neither an oath by the god, nor a sworn agreement, a treaty. And what this is talking about is the Sumerians do not recognize any oath or treaty as binding upon them. And that makes them rebels and outcasts and enemies of the king Esarhaddon. All right, so now we're going to go into some examples of what it means to know in the scriptures. We're going to go through a lot of scriptural verses and talk about the definition of to know and how it applies to these verses. And just so you know, that the term to know does appear quite often in the scriptures, and oftentimes it is talking about what we would think of knowing, you know, just knowing about something. And you can just kind of tell just from the context, if you just read the verse, you can kind of tell which one it's talking about. So these are some examples of Yahweh knowing his servants. And the first one is going to be in Genesis 18, verse 19. We'll start in verse 17 for context, and it says, And Yahweh said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing, since Abraham is certainly going to become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed by him. For I have known him, so that he commands his children and his household after him to guard the way of Yahweh, to do righteousness and right ruling, so that Yahweh brings Abraham what he has spoken to him." So right there you can see Yahweh says that he has known Abraham. He recognizes Abraham as his legitimate servant. Very few people in the scriptures, sadly, are said to have been known by Yahweh. It all comes to a heart of obedience. See, Abraham taught his children Yahweh's ways, taught him to guard the Torah, that Abraham had, and to do right ruling and justice throughout the land. All right, and the next example, we're going to go to Exodus 33, and this is where Yahweh talks about having known Moshe, his servant. So Exodus 33, verse 12 through 13, "And Moshe said to Yahweh, 'See, you were saying to me, bring up this people, but you have not made known to me whom you would send with me, though you have said, I know you by name. And you have also found favor in my eyes. And now, please, if I have found favor in your eyes, please show me your way and let me know you, so that I find favor in your eyes and consider this nation is your people.'" So right there, you see one example. The first time the word known is used, it's just talking about, just knowledge of. But then it goes on and states that Yahweh told Moshe that he knows him by name. He respects his authority, he respects his position as his ultimate, or as his vassal here. And then Moshe begs Yahweh to let him know Yahweh himself. He wants to have respect for Yahweh, to recognize Yahweh as his ultimate authority. Know that Yahweh will fulfill his duties as the suzerain to be his shield and his protector and stand up for him when others come against him. And that's exactly what we see in the rebellion of Korach. Remember, Moshe didn't rise up against Korach. He just said, you know what, we're going to let my suzerain deal with you. You know, we'll let him choose between me and you. We're both vassals, and you're rebelling against me, the person who Yahweh has put in ultimate authority over this nation of vassals. And we can see there that it was actually Yahweh who stood up on Moshe's behalf and not Moshe having to stand up for himself. All right, the next verse we're going to go to is 2 Samuel 7, verse 20. Starting in verse 18, "And the king David went in and sat before Yahweh, and he said, 'Who am I, O Master Yahweh, and what is my house, that you have brought me this far? And yet this is a small matter in your eyes, O Master Yahweh, and you have also spoken of your servant's house for a great while to come. And is this the teaching of a man, O Master Yahweh? And what more does David, your servant, say to you? For you, Master Yahweh, know your servant. Because of your word, and according to your own heart, you have done all this greatness to make it known to your servant. And you are great indeed, O Master Yahweh, for there is none like you, and there is no Elohim but you, according to all that we have heard with our ears." So here again we see that David is stating that Yahweh has known him, right? Yahweh has recognized David as his legitimate vassal, as his legitimate vassal king over all of Israel. And that's why Yahweh stood up for David and not for Saul in those times. Next verse we're going to be going to is Amos 3, verse 2. Starting in verse 1, this states, "Hear this word that Yahweh has spoken against you, O children of Yisrael, against the entire clan which I brought up in the land of Mitzrayim, saying, You alone have I known of all the clans of the earth, Therefore, I will punish you for all your crookednesses. So Israel is the only tribe, the only people out of all the entire earth that Yahweh has recognized as his legitimate vessels. And because of that, it is Israel alone that he punishes for their crookedness. Not because he's a cruel master, but because he wants to correct us and make us perfect so that we are able to live in harmony with each other and obtain the full blessings of the covenant with him. The other nations are not punished for breaking the treaty. What they are punished for is coming against Israel. You know, in the end of days, we look at the book of Revelation, it seems like the whole earth is being judged. Well, it's the believers in Yahweh who are being judged in order to correct them, and then it's the nations that come against Israel who are being punished because Yahweh is standing up and defending his people, his vassals, right? Even if a vassal is not keeping to the terms of the treaty, that doesn't lessen the suzerain's responsibility to stand up for that vassal. You know, that's why when we look at history, Daniel's been talking about this on his teachings, you know, about Israel's lovers. Well, Israel's lovers were allowed to conquer Israel and do horrible things to them because Israel went astray from the covenant. But if you notice, Yahweh always promises as well that he's going to punish those nations that came against Israel, even though they were a tool of his punishment because they came against Israel. His vassal, he will always stand up for and defend his vassals, his legitimate vassals, because that's the terms of the covenant. Regardless of what you do, he still has the right to stand up for, or he still has the responsibility to stand up for you, and by no means leave you unpunished. So that's very important to understand in our lives as individuals today. You know, he'll let bad things happen to us to correct us. But when someone comes against us, he will stand up for us because we are still in covenant with him. All right, we're going to go over a couple examples of people not knowing Yahweh. First one is in 1 Samuel 2, verse 12. And it says, "And Elkanah went to his house in Ramah, but the youth served Yahweh before Eli the priest. And the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They did not know Yahweh. And the ruling of the priests with the people was that when any man offered a slaughtering, the priest's servants shall come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat is cooking." Right, so right there we see Eli's sons, they were priests. They obviously knew who Yahweh was. And yet here in 1 Samuel, it says that they did not know Yahweh. So going back to our definition of what it means to know, that means that they did not recognize his authority. That's why they were doing such abominable things in the house of Yahweh, in the tabernacle, is because they had absolutely no respect for Yahweh's authority. All right, our next verse we're going to be going to is Exodus 1, verse 8, verse you all are familiar with. And it says, "Then a sovereign arose over Mitzrayim, who did not know Yosef. And he said to his people, 'See, the people of the children of Yisrael are more and stronger than we. Come, let us act wisely toward them, lest they increase, and it shall be that when fighting befalls us, that they shall join our enemies and fight against us and shall go up out of the land.'" So right there you can see, obviously, it hadn't been that long. Maybe 100 years at the most. I'll say 200 years at the most. And there rose a Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. Well, he obviously knew about Joseph. I mean, Joseph was a very important person in history. He saved all of Egypt from a massive famine, and as well, along with that, all of the Egyptians had sold themselves to the crown in order to get food. So he was very influential. But this Pharaoh did not know Yosef, which means he did not respect the authority of Yosef. He did not respect what Yosef had done for the country, the nation of Egypt. And that's why he acted harshly and wisely against the children of Israel. Our last example here is Exodus 5, verse 2. So we'll turn there real fast. And it states, "And afterward Moshe and Aharon went in and said to Pharaoh, 'Thus says Yahweh, Elohim of Israel, let my people go, so that they may keep a festival to me in the wilderness.' And Pharaoh said, 'Who is Yahweh, that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know Yahweh, nor am I going to let Israel go.'" So right there, you know, once again, he probably knew of Yahweh, but he did not know Yahweh. He did not respect Yahweh as the authority, as the suzerain over all of the earth. And because of that, his heart was hardened, and we know the end of the story. All right. To truly know Yahweh is to have full faith in his word. This means that you fully believe both in the blessings and the curses. You know that he will provide for your basic needs, food and shelter, and he will also correct you with a rod of iron, as the scriptures say, when you go astray. When you truly know Yahweh, you have full trust in his word. When you look at the words of Yeshua, he says, if the... I'm blanking right now. If the sparrow goes, is fed every day, what makes you think that I won't feed you? And what if you see the fields are clothed, what makes you think I won't provide clothing for you? He will always provide our basic needs, but he'll also take away things that we don't necessarily need in order to try us and to correct us so that we become better people. Better servants of him, and better able to function in a society of loyal vassals to Yahweh. All right, so we're going to go into a few more verses here, looking at knowledge. The first one is going to be Jeremiah 22, verses 15 and 16. And it states, "Do you reign because you enclose yourself in cedar? Did not your father eat and drink and do right ruling and righteousness? Then it was well with him. He defended the cause of the poor and needy. Then it was well. Was this not to know me, declares Yahweh? But your eyes and your heart were only upon your own greedy gain, and on the shedding of innocent blood, and on oppression and doing violence." So right there, Yahweh gives us a definition of what it means to know him. It means to do right ruling and righteousness, and to defend the cause of the poor and needy. And those things are spread throughout Scripture. Yahweh is constantly telling us that that's what we need to be doing. Right ruling, justice, mercy towards the poor and needy. Next one we're going to go to is Daniel 11, verse 32 through 35. "And by flatteries he shall profane those who do wrong against the covenant. But the people who know their Elohim shall be strong and shall act. And those of the people who have insight shall give understanding to many. And they shall stumble by sword and by flame and by captivity and plundering for days. And when they stumble, they shall be helped, a little help. But many shall join them by flatteries. And some who have insight shall stumble to refine them and to cleanse them and to make them white until the time of the end. For it is still for an appointed time." So you see there that the people who know Yahweh shall be strong and act in the last days. The people who recognize him as their ultimate authority, as their legitimate suzerain, will know that he will protect them during the reign of the Antichrist. And there's no need to fear. Even in death, he promises to bring us back with eternal life. So what is there to fear if you truly know Yahweh? The last one here we're going to be going to is Numbers 14, verse 31. We're just going to start in verse 30. And it says, "None of you except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Yehoshua, son of Nun, shall enter the land which I swore to make you dwell in. But your little ones, whom I have said would become prey, or sorry, whom you said would become prey, I shall bring in, and they shall know the land which you have rejected. But as for you, your carcasses are going to fall in the wilderness." So when it says that they will know the land, what that's speaking of is that they're going to recognize the blessings of the covenant and come into the land that they were promised by Yahweh to their forefathers. So that's all knowledge of Yahweh. All right, so now we're going to go into the book of Hosea. I've got 5 verses here that I picked out. The book of Hosea is all about the knowledge of Yahweh. And it's very, very enlightening once you understand the definition of what it means to know Yahweh. So the first one we're going to be going to is Hosea 2, verse 19 through 20. And it states, "And you shall take as a bride, and I shall take you as a bride unto me forever, and take you as a bride unto me in righteousness and right ruling and kindness and compassion. And I shall take you as a bride unto me in trustworthiness, and you shall know Yahweh." When Yahweh takes us as his bride, we are going to know him. We are going to respect him as our ultimate authority, as our suzerain. The next one we're going to go to is Hosea 4, verse 1 through 2. And it says, "Hear the words of Yahweh, you children of Israel, for Yahweh has a case against the inhabitants of the land. For there is no truth, nor kindness, nor knowledge of Elohim in the land. Swearing and lying and murdering and stealing and committing adultery have increased, and bloodshed follows bloodshed." So here we have a great example of what happens when there's a lack of knowledge, when there's a lack of respecting Yahweh's authority as suzerain. No one keeps to the covenant stipulations, and therefore lawlessness increases. And just as, you know, all of us have been saying all along, when you reject the Torah, violence follows. The Torah wasn't given as just an arbitrary set of laws that, you know, God just wanted to see what we would do. They're for our own good. It's to form a community where none existed before. So now we're going to go to Hosea 4, verse 6, and this is a very famous verse. It's quoted. And with this new understanding of to know and knowledge, we'll see just how that plays out. And it states, "My people have perished for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I reject you from being priests before me. Since you have forgotten the Torah of your Elohim, I will also forget your children." So, you know, Yahweh's people perish for lack of knowledge. And you can't say, once again, you can't say that they don't know who Yahweh is. They don't recognize him as the ultimate authority. And both Christianity and Judaism and Messianics are all guilty of this. You know, when Yahweh says something, he really means it. We need to understand that he is our suzerain, and his word is the ultimate, is the final say in any matter. You know, instead of making excuses and coming up with theology to get around doing certain commandments, we need to understand that he knows what's best for us and that we need to follow his word regardless of how hard it is to follow, you know, for us. We have to let our flesh die in order to, you know, for that seed to grow so that we can truly become servants of the Most High Elohim. All right, we're going to go to Hosea 8, verse 2 now. Starting in verse 1, "Put the ram's horn on your mouth like an eagle against the house of Yahweh, because they transgress my covenant, and they have rebelled against my Torah. They cry out to me, 'My Elohim, we, Israel, know you. Yisrael has rejected what is good and enemies pursue. They have made sovereigns, but not from me. They have made rulers, but I have not known. From their silver and their gold they have made idols for themselves, and they are also cut off. So here we have Yisrael claiming that they know Yahweh. They claim that they respect his ultimate authority, and yet instead of putting the kings in place that he chooses, they put their own kings in place because they want to do what feels good to them. They make their own idols and worship them. And idolatry, when it really boils down to, is doing what feels good to yourself, for yourself, and not what feels right. It's all about me instead of being all about him. We're going to go to Hosea 13, verse 4 through 5 next. And it reads, "But I am Yahweh, your Elohim, since the land of Mitzrayim. And an Elohim besides me you shall not know, for there is no Savior besides me. I knew you in the wilderness, in the land of drought. When they were fed, they were satisfied. They were satisfied, and their heart was exalted, and they forgot me." So right there, that really is very similar to what we were reading before from the vassal treaties of the Hittite kings. Right, Yahweh says, other than me, you don't know anyone else. You don't accept any relationship as suzerain vassal relationship between anyone else. You respect my right as the ultimate suzerain. All right, so we're going to finish up with two more verses here. And the first one, I'm hoping that by now this one was just kind of nagging at the back of your mind. When I started reading the paper that I got most of this from, that I'll post as a resource link to, or the name of the article, so you can go back and look at that. This verse was just nagging in the back of my mind. To know, what does that mean? It reminded me, of course, of Jeremiah 31. So we're going to go there now and read over that. Jeremiah 31, we're going to go verses 31 through 36. And it says, "See, the days are coming, declares Yahweh, which I will make a new covenant with the house of Yisrael and the house of Yehuda. Not like the covenant I made with their fathers in the day which I took them out by the hand to bring them out of the land of Mitzrayim, my covenant which they broke, though I was a husband to them, declares Yahweh. For this is the covenant that I shall make with the house of Yisrael. After those days, declares Yahweh, I shall put my Torah in their inward parts, and write it on their hearts, and I shall be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. And no longer shall they teach one another, each one his neighbor, and each one his brother, saying, Know Yahweh, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, declares Yahweh, for I shall forgive their crookedness and remember their sin no more. Thus said Yahweh, who gives the sun for light by day, and the laws of the moon and stars for the light by night, who stirs up the sea, and the waves roar. Yahweh of hosts is his name. If these laws vanish from before me, declares Yahweh, then the seed of Israel shall also cease from being a nation before me forever." So right there you can see there is absolutely no way that the new covenant is in effect right now. Why? Because you can't say that everyone knows Yahweh. Everyone knows of Yahweh at this point in time, most likely, but hardly anybody knows him in the covenant treaty sense of the verb yada, to know. What it means here is that everyone will respect him as the ultimate authority. That's why in Zechariah 14, it talks about every nation of the earth has to come up to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, because they will, at that point in time, even, regardless of who they are, they're all going to know that Yahweh is the King of Kings in the heavens, and that Yeshua is the King of Kings here on the earth, and they will all have to respect his authority. Otherwise, there's going to be severe punishment. And when it talks about not sending the rain clouds, biblically, that's a very harsh punishment. That's akin to death. If you don't have rain clouds, you don't produce crops, now you go into a famine, and now you perish. So that's a very harsh punishment. We'll all know Yahweh. We'll all respect his ultimate authority. And I like how it finishes up here, and Yahweh states, if these laws vanish before me, talk about the laws governing the moon, the stars, and the sun, then the seed of Israel will also perish. So, right there, he's just tying in. If you're actually sitting there telling other people that Israel's done away with, you have no knowledge of Yahweh. You do not respect his authority. He states that Israel will always be a nation before him. There will be individuals thrown out, just like Paul talks about in Romans 12. Branches are cut off and branches are grafted in. But it is always the nation of Israel. There's no separate entity called the church that replaced Israel. And, what it boils down to, when you sit there and tell someone that Israel's replaced, you are calling Yahweh a liar. And honestly, that's probably a lot of the reason why a lot of people are going to suffer through the tribulation, is because they do not recognize Yahweh is the ultimate authority, that his word is the final word, and when he says Israel is forever, he really means it. The last verse we're going to look at here is in the first century writings in Matthew 11, verse 27, and it states, "All have been handed over to me by my Father, and no one knows the Son except the Father. Nor does anyone know the Father except the Son, and he whom the Son wishes to reveal to him." So right there you can see that this same terminology is used in the first century as well. Yeshua says, no one knows the Son except the Father. Well, the 12 disciples knew the Son. You could say that they had a pretty intimate relationship. And yet Yeshua said, no one knows the Son except for the Father. He's talking in the language of the ancient Near Eastern covenants. He's saying that that the Father alone recognizes Yeshua as his legitimate vassal. There's no other suzerains that recognize Yeshua as their vassal, because Yeshua is the vassal of the Father. There's that monogamous relationship. There's no one else in between there. There's no other gods. Yeshua recognizes Yahweh as his suzerain, his King of Kings, and likewise the Father recognizes Yeshua as his legitimate vassal. No one knows the Father except the Son, and whom the Son wishes to reveal to him. So that kind of goes into, I believe it's 1 Corinthians 15, where it talks about Yeshua will subdue the entire earth, and once all is subdued, then he lays it at the feet of the Father. So right there, you can see this whole relationship of the suzerain vassal relationship, that the Father is the ultimate authority, and below him is Yeshua, and Yeshua subjects the entire earth to him so that it's all for the glory of the Father. All right, so this is going to be the end of this. I really hope that you guys have enjoyed this series and have learned a lot. And if you have any questions at all, please get on the forums and ask them. There's no such thing as a dumb question. The only question that is dumb is the one that you don't ask. You've got to get out there and just learn from everyone else. Rico, just a couple weeks ago, he was talking about how he learned, he even learns from Tony Robinson. We all need each other. We all need to get in here and share, and not get all of our information from one watering hole. We need to be a body and learn from each other. So, until next time, Yahweh bless you and keep you. Shalom.
He still speaks from heaven each and every day. I'll let Yisrael say, we will.